I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right. Good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WIAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here for 2 hours a day. I come to you today with a message of some hope. We'll see if it resonates with you that way. I don't have a quote of the day. I've got a couple of long audio quotes of the day, I guess, what you could say. I believe I can be accused of, and probably accurately, some level of a kumbaya guy. And many people say that's ridiculous, unfathomable. We must be at existential war. We're in the middle of a culture war. I believe that people underestimate the number of sane people in the world. I'm not talking about that we have an excess of wildly intelligent critical thinkers in this country. I think we are bereft of this. It was very interesting. I was behind a car the other day, and they had two bumper stickers. Actually, they had several bumper stickers, but two that were right next to each other. One of them said, critical thinking, the other American deficit. So I guess this is, you know, the idea, well, we've got this huge financial deficit, but we also have this deficit of critical thinking. Right next to that bumper sticker was a Biden-Harris campaign bumper sticker. It's just kind of interesting, the minds of people. This person obviously fashioned themselves as a critical thinker. They elected a brain-addled, corrupt, establishment, insane person. And so anyway, you know, our ideas are a spectrum, aren't they? But I do talk a lot about the fact that I believe if average Americans would stop pointing their anger at their neighbors, at their cousins, at anybody who just disagrees with them or votes differently or maybe lives a different lifestyle, and instead started paying attention to the people who are really robbing us all, we might change something. I'm not of any mind that that's going to happen anytime soon, but I've got a couple of audio clips that I ran across this weekend, and I wanted to play them for you. This first one is from the Jimmy Dore Show. Now, I've talked a lot about Jimmy Dore on this show. Hope I'm not getting repetitive, but he is a very left-wing, progressive comedian. He was a Bernie Sanders guy, but it was very interesting to listen to him as he realized that Bernie Sanders is bought and paid for like the rest of them. Jimmy Dore was big into the Squad. This is AOC and Ilhan Omar because of their progressive ideas. See, this guy is a real progressive. I disagree with him on a ton of things, but it was interesting to watch him support the Squad. And then as the Squad took power and actually governed after they had been elected, he realized they also had been bought and paid for. And so he is seeing the people that he looked to for change in the government, people that profess, that go out and pander to the left, are selling them out just like the people who pander to the right are selling you out. And so at the very least, Jimmy Dore is an honest left-wing guy. He's an honest progressive. He talked endlessly about the ridiculousness of the Russia hoax. He took the COVID vaccine and had pretty bad side effects from it, came out talking about it, and it woke him up to the COVID regime, so he will change his mind when the facts change. This is an intellectually honest person. I would rather associate with intellectually honest people, even if they disagree with me, because at least I know there's a smidgen, there's some possibility that you may be able to change their mind, or they will at least debate with you in good faith. They're not just partisan hack regurgitators, which is really the vast majority of the population. I bring this up because Jimmy Dore, I want you to hear this clip. And the reason I say I bring you a message of hope today is because if people would back up just a little bit and quit playing the elite's game, which is, you know, we talk a lot about the left and their identity politics. Well, I believe the right is equally guilty of that in casting everybody who voted differently than Donald Trump and straight GOP ticket, hate this country, and they're all Satanists and pedophiles. This is much easier than actually judging individual after individual, and that's maybe a tad bit extreme of what people believe, but we are in a culture war and a political world where politics has invaded everything, and I think I just want to show you that there are people on the left certainly reachable. This clip with Jimmy Dore, he is with a panel of people. They're all progressives. Each one of these people, he does not invite a lot of right-wingers on there. He's been on the Tucker Carlson show because he's honest, and Tucker and Jimmy Dore would disagree on a lot of stuff, but Tucker Carlson realizes this is at least an honest guy. He's willing to talk about the things that are just patently untrue and in the narratives we're being given. Jimmy Dore is also just great on the media. He just takes the media to task, even though people think they're left-leaning. No, MSNBC is a corporatist-leaning site. They are kind of like the corporate woke movement. But every one of these people that you're going to hear talk on this clip, they are all leftists. And this is where I'm telling you, there is a lot of common ground among the 90% of sane people out there. If we would ever kind of come together and drop some of the more ridiculous divisions that we have, and they will still remain, we'll still have a lot of differences, but we need to dispatch with the people that are running us into the ground first before we can tackle the debates between ourselves. Here's Jimmy Dore and his, he's talking about Biden ending the pandemic and kind of laughing at it because Biden came out last, you know, a little over a week ago on 60 Minutes, said the pandemic is over. His administration's been trying to walk it back. They're really making fun of him for this because Jimmy Dore and the rest of these people understand this is a big pharma operation. This has absolutely nothing to do with health or COVID. But I want you to hear what three progressives on the left are saying about Joe Biden and COVID.
I just got a text. Let me read this text. Make sure I'm not making this up. This is from Ethan Klein. He says New York City just fired almost 1,000 more teachers and aides for being unvaccinated. Please don't be desensitized to the horrific discrimination that's still happening.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. They're still doing that. And that's not based on science. So they like to wag their finger at MAGA and Florida and Texas for not following the science. New York is not following the science, and they have almost never have followed the science. None of them. And Andrew Cuomo is a murderer.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
Which is way worse than you could say about DeSantis or Abbott or anybody else. Andrew Cuomo should be in jail for murdering people. Let me bring in my panel. What do you think? Is it over?
Go ahead, Jackson.
I just find this interview incredible because you got to imagine they probably did like 50 takes of this single interview for 60 minutes. But even then, directly after the interview airs, you know, I see like three different articles right off the bat from the White House press secretary saying, well, that's not exactly what he meant about Taiwan. That's not exactly what he meant about the pandemic. It's like, well, what does he mean? How can you guys not get a coherent message out there? Who knows? Who knows what this means? You know, we clearly know what's going on with COVID, but who knows what they're going to tell us next?
Yeah. And did you hear what he said right after? The pandemic's over, but we still got a lot of work to do, you know,
COVID,
which means the national emergency still exists, right? The public health emergency still exists, which is coming from the HHS, which means the money and the gravy train keep going. If you're not paying attention to what's going on in the WHO right now, they're trying to still amend their international health regulations and bring in this treaty where they can take global control by splitting up the world into regions. And anybody who's participating in the WHO and part of this treaty or part of these regulations has to give over their sovereignty. Their constitution is voided so that the FARC, they're called FERCs, the regions, where the WHO will then take control of the country and decide what to do in the case of another pandemic. So all this stuff is still going on. Not to forget, in your backyard, gentlemen, because now I live in Vegas because I got the hell out of California, draconian crazy laws are still in play. They have that kind of Julian Assange law where they're being able to take disinformation people down, including doctors, and punishing them by taking away their medical licenses. And they're still trying to push the 12-year-old is allowed to get the vaccine without his parents knowing whatnot. That stuff is still in play. So this is far from over, and they're going to continue to censor everybody out there. And like you mentioned, still the federal workers are still obligated to get the jab or they get fired. A lot of people in the medical industry. We still have those SEALs and people in the military who are still fighting this. So even though they say it's over for a political gain so they get the people out there that will go and vote for them, behind the scenes and really just on paper, there's a lot of stuff still going on where COVID is far from over.
Now, you listen to this. This is three progressive guys. And the reason I bring this up, the reason I say this is a message for hope, is I would like people to understand. Quit buying into this caricature that everybody on the left is just a radical, insane person who's hysterical about COVID and hysterical about Russia. There's some of them out there. But I'm telling you, the media hypes them up the same way that the media takes takes the Charlottesville people and paints them as all of MAGA. But the right falls for believing that everybody on the left has lost their ever-loving mind. There can be no consensus. We must fight them tooth and nail. We're ready to fight a civil war against these people. If you listen to that clip, what that guy just said, as a progressive, he sounds like Tucker Carlson. He sounds like anybody on the right just speaking about the truth of that. He's talking about the WHO taking over the world. This is the kind of stuff I've heard on Alex Jones. These people understand what's going on. They're not down with this. Now, I would imagine every single one of these people want Medicare for all. Now, I got to tell you, I'll debate them all day on that. I think that's just absolutely wrong. But they're not insane. The media loves to, and then conservative media loves to take the most aberrant, weirdo leftist, and then, some leftist, some bizarro, mentally unstable leftist has some kind of a meltdown, and conservative media shares this across every platform, and it's seen millions and millions of times, and all people on the right see, look, that's what we're fighting. Half the country, all the Biden voters, that's who they are. They're these insane snowflake social justice warriors who must be defeated. That's not the case. It's the whack jobs on the left, and there's plenty of them. Don't get me wrong. A lot of them are in Congress. There's whack jobs on the left, but they are amplified to make it look like everybody on the left is nut job like this. And again, don't make no mistake, I have huge disagreements, particularly economic issues, with all three of these guys. But at least they're willing to look at it. I'm going to play a little bit more of this clip. But wait a second. You hang on. I've got another clip for you after this one. But I'm going to let them finish out this segment. Again, this is three progressives discussing the government reaction to COVID, how ridiculous it is, and they understand the game of profit-taking.
Well, friend of the show, Dr. Aaron Kennedy, says President Biden announced on 60 Minutes that the pandemic is over. I concur, it has long been over. But why then is the president continuing the national state of emergency? Is it because the president gains access to an additional 136 statutory emergency powers? Or is it to support the emergency use authorization vaccine medication gravy train? I think it's both those things. Yeah. Or is it the Medicare payment to hospitals for every identified COVID case gravy train? Or the PCR testing bonanza? Either the emergency is over or it's not. Can't have it both ways just for political maneuvering. Well, that's exactly what they're doing. But just, hey, cut Joe Biden a break. He doesn't even know which way to walk off stage after a speech. You'd expect him to figure out all this pandemic stuff, too? Come on.
Yeah. There you go. That's three progressives, very popular progressives, too. And what I love about Jimmy Dore, maybe I talk about him too much. He's that Mike Madison. He's constantly talking about how we should love people on the left. Well, you can debate their ideas all day. And there are certainly people on the left that are unreachable. Unreachable. Just stewing in hate, thinking that everybody's a racist if they're not them. You know, I mean, there is just some abject, horrible things coming from the left. And I don't know what percentage it is. But my problem is that every single Democrat I know is not insane. They know a lot of this stuff that's going on in schools is bizarre and weird. And you just wait. I've got a clip when I come back. It's going to show you another something else of lumping all people into these groups and thinking that you need to fight them tooth and nail and because they didn't vote for your guy. And I believe, you know, many of you conservatives, you've been right, as we have been here at WIAB, and we stood alone. We stood alone against this shot program. We stood alone against Tate Reeves' emergency orders here. We stood alone against the entire COVID narrative here, and I think we've come out on the right side of history. You know, conservatives are on the right side of things like drag queen story hour for 5 months, 5 year olds. You know, you're right about the pornography stuff in the school. You're right about energy policies that are hurting us here in the United States. Jimmy Orr and his progressive group have talked about that as well. And they're greenies. They are have got some environmental stuff, but they understand that this is a con. They understand that. You've got a bunch of limousine liberals flying around in private jets lecturing to everybody else to turn off their air conditioning. They see that. So there's so many conversations that could be had, but instead, both sides have decided to take the worst leaders, and I'm just going to go ahead and say it. People have decided to take the Trumpian style, which is castigate everybody as against you. It's like George Bush. You're either with us or you're against us. So if somebody disagrees with you about something or they vote differently than you, you can't have a conversation with them because they hate the country and they're insane. They're all a bunch of social justice warriors. There are tons of examples of these insane social justice warriors out there. I'm just telling you, the media and even right-wing conservative media, they highlight these people on the fringes of the left, and they blow them up to be this huge thing so that it rallies all conservatives in this culture war. When I come back, it's another inconvenient clip for the culture war, but boy, it's a goodie. Stick around. I'll be right back.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side.
Look, the formula for stuff I talk about on the show is not, it's not designed for ratings or fanship. It's definitely not that. There's nobody up in Starkville doing a show before the Egg Bowl talking about how, you know, how great Ole Miss is too. Hey, we got to give Ole Miss some credit. They got some great fans. And people want to hear how Mississippi State is strong and they're going in. I mean, when it's team sports, you get on your team. It's got to be my team versus their team. That's what sells. I understand that. But I watch people lose their ever-loving minds, and everybody is guilty of identity politics, which is if you voted for somebody or if you don't love somebody, then you're a communist or you're a fascist. I talk to a conservative audience, so I'm trying to point this out to you, and I'm bringing you some left-wing examples, but I could do the same thing to the left who believes every MAGA person is a racist, and you're sold these kinds of things because they highlight some story, which is generally made up in the first place, to try to convince you that every Trump supporter is racist and anti-immigrant and just every other label that they throw at them. It's patently not true. If people would start just talking to each other, and, you know, I guess I probably wouldn't care if the elite class was not robbing every single one of us, and I realize they're going to keep getting away with it as long as we're so divided. Now, there's going to be 10% on each side. They're lost. They're gone. They're done for. You'll never reason with them. Maybe more than that on the left. They really seem to have taken on a whole new tenor of insanity in some areas on the left. Like Mike. But you don't understand. The left is trying to indoctrinate our children in our schools. Well, you're right. There is an element of that. But I'm telling you, that's coming from your government. Not from every single person who might identify differently than you, either sexually or politically. This clip right here was pretty amazing to me. This is a guy addressing a school board. Might be a little different than you expect. He is with a group called Gays Against Groomers. So check this out. This is a gay guy talking to a school board.
Good evening. My name is Mario Presents, and I'm here as a representative from Gays Against Groomers Coalition with over 250,000 followers across social media and as the uncle of two students in your district. It has come to our attention that the district intends to teach transgenderism to children under the age of 10 without parental consent. If I were to teach your child about my sexuality without your consent or involvement, I'd be arrested. But when the school district does it, it's education. Districts are teaching transgenderism when they should be teaching science, math, and language. Instead, teachers are hiding student pronouns from their parents under the guise of gender affirmation. Can you imagine the uproar if schools were evangelizing or baptizing children without parental consent? Isn't that sort of what you're doing? You don't tuck these children in at night. You don't teach them to stand up to bullies. You don't pay their medical bills. And you certainly don't hold their hands in the hospital. These parents do. Simple truths based in science need to be upheld for our society to flourish. The gross indoctrination we're seeing is creating a lifetime of medication and hormones because you can't simply pause puberty. Men cannot become women, and sex chromosomes are encoded into the fabric of our DNA. Simply affirming a teenager's gender is akin to affirming anorexia. Both are body dysmorphic disorders, yet we don't teach the starving teenagers how to binge and purge or affirm that they are indeed overweight. However, school districts, including yours, seem to have no issue secretly teaching girls that they can be boys because they feel uncomfortable in their bodies. A grown adult woman can't get a hysterectomy without extensive medical forms and doctor's visits. But Dr. Safir over the hill in Sherman Oaks is willing to do top and bottom surgery, sterilizing children for life. Parents must be a part of the education process when teaching sexuality to students, and it definitely doesn't need to happen under the age of 10 years old.
Yeah, that's probably fairly unexpected to a lot of people. We love to take everybody LGBTQ, IAP, all the rest of the insanity of the letters there. We love to take them, throw them all in the same basket and say they're all indoctrinated. They're coming for the kids. Yeah, there's a portion of them that are, no doubt about it. But there's elements even within their own community that are fighting back against this stuff. I say this should be a message of hope for people to understand that you are not battling half the country. You're really taking on about maybe 10%. And to be honest with you, when it comes to the transgenderism issue, I'll bet you it's probably 3 to 5%. Of the country is driving this weird policy. And most of it is coming from the government. Somebody with radical views, just some normie out there running around spouting off weirdness. Can I get this stuff into schools? No, you need a government and this current regime. But this is not necessarily new. This has been bad education, bad sex education, all kinds of the school noodling into our affairs is quite old, as a matter of fact, not to this weird degree, but it's been around for a while. But it is your government that is instituting these policies, not every member of the LGBTQ community. Now, everybody will immediately think to themselves, yeah, but I know 1,000 examples, Mike, where you're wrong. They are insane people. Yes, they are. But I'm telling you, in a country of 330 million Americans, they are taking a few dozen whack jobs on TikTok, and they are amplifying their voices through social media to put it in front of every single conservative so that every single conservative thinks every single gay person is out to groom their child. And I see it having an effect. Exactly the same way, I'll say it again, to the left, where they take one little thing, or it's usually a made-up event. I mean, there aren't really that many. There's no instances of Trump supporters being, you know, violent in the streets with each other. What they have to do is take some event and then they label somebody a MAGA supporter. And then the left-wing media will amplify these events to try to convince everybody on the left that every Trump supporter and every Republican is a racist. They take these small little things. This is the amplifying effect of social media and being able to share these things. And then they go viral and within our bubbles. And we believe that everybody outside of our bubble must be just like this weirdo. It's not the case. So, as I say, you know, my tact here is different. It's not radio profit driven. There is no money. There is no allegiance to people who preach We should all be getting along, at least until we stop what's going on at the top, which is basically full financial looting, and now we're at the cusp of World War III. A lot of the arguments that you're having with people on the other side of the aisle, whether you're Democrat or Republican, black or white, liberal or conservative, a lot of those things are going to be pretty unimportant should we allow this Biden administration and our government that's been champing at the bit for decades for war with Russia. If we allow them to get their way with this, some of these other issues that seem big right now going to be pretty small. So until we stop these psychopaths at the very top, we might want to consider maybe an armistice. We'll agree to disagree on certain things between the right and the left, but let's first root out the true evil in our society, which is at the top.
Your arms around me, I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding, I need your love.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. You can always reach me, Mike Madison, at WYAB.com. That's really all I do. I don't do social media. I can't stand it. I am telling you, I think that I don't think it's any coincidence that the rise of the smartphone and social media has gotten us to this point where we are so at each other's throats. I think those things go hand in hand. I think they also go along with what is a dying empire and a very corrupt financial system leaving more and more people behind. We've talked a lot about that here on the show. We've seen the greatest wealth transfer from the working people of this country to the uber wealthy over the past 13 years that's basically ever happened in the history of mankind. But most people don't understand it. They can't talk about it. They can't really identify it, but they're dissatisfied. So they go to seek comfort in these groups. And so what happens with social media is everybody gets into their groups. Groups are fine. I love people coming together for a common cause. But what happens is eventually within these groups, it becomes just an echo chamber. And everybody in right wing or everybody in left wing groups wants to find the most outrageous example of the other side behaving badly or saying something incredibly stupid and dangerous. And they bring it into their group and it just ricochets around in that bubble until everybody believes that everybody on the other side is exactly like this person. This is what we're fighting, they will say in these big groups. Meanwhile, what you're all about to be treated to, in my opinion here, I saw a headline today. I couldn't find the whole story because I was paywalled out of it by MarketWatch. But the headline is a historic global bond market crash. Excuse me. A historic global bond market crash threatens liquidation of world's most crowded trades, says Bank of America. There are things happening right now in our financial system that nobody's paying any attention to. Maybe we shouldn't when we're at the cusp of nuclear World War III. But this has been brewing for quite a while. Republicans, again, what they will do is misdiagnose the problem because they'll get into their Republican and conservative bubbles and they'll echo around, this is all Joe Biden's fault, and pay no attention to the previous 100 years of problems that have led to this, particularly the last 13, 14 years of actions that have led to these problems through Republican and Democrat presidents and Congresses. So the Republican bubble will bang around within their bubble, this is all Joe Biden's fault. Within the liberal side, they will bang around that this is all capitalism's fault. It's just so toxic. But what's coming? I had a conversation with a guy last night. He may be listening now. So apparently somebody put a calendar on the big financial mess. It was supposed to start on Saturday. Beware of people who give you specific dates like they know. I have fallen for those in the past as well. You hear people who have got some level of credibility, have got some level of knowledge, and they will come out with some scary stuff. I have altered my life around financial forecasts before. I have lost every time I've done that. It doesn't mean don't get prepared for things, but just be careful of people who have got dates. Now, if somebody sets a date, it's kind of like some of the end of the world people. You know, eventually they're going to be right. But if it takes them 60 tries to get something right over the course of 5 years and you have stressed for 5 years and changed your way of life every single time you hear these kinds of things, it ends up being a kind of a fool's game, particularly if it's out of your control. I have learned to just plow ahead, do the best I can do for myself and my family, and if something happens, I'm ready to respond at that point. But anyway, what's happening economically right now is very, very, very dangerous, and you know, there was talk of the stock market halting today. The Dow is down $7. Today was supposed to be the day the market was down by 20%, halted. Market can't go down more than 20% anymore now. The masters of the universe, the financial institutions, have put circuit breakers in. If the market goes down by 7% in a day, they halt trading for, I believe, 15 minutes. I would imagine this allows the banks and everybody else to get their ducks in a row, to get on the right side of every trade that they need to get on, unwind any of their long positions, and transition to short so they can open the market back up again and let it fall another 8 points. And I believe there's another circuit breaker at around 15 points, and then at 20 points down in a day, they will halt the markets. No more trading for that day. So they put circuit breakers in these things, but today was supposed to be one of those days the market goes down by 20%. And let me tell you, there can be an announcement at any minute that could trigger a huge cascade in stocks. We are that fragile. But it doesn't look like it's going to be today. A lot of people have been warning, including Peter Schiff, who's very smart. He's said many times, there's a possibility that Monday will be a Black Monday, which is a huge down Monday where trading is halted. But he never says it with any certainty. He just says the charts are looking a certain way and the economic indicators are leading a certain way, so it's possible. Just know, when this thing goes down, some of those people you're alienating out of your life, you may actually need at some point. We have been so robbed. When I come back, I'm going to get into a story. I'm going to do a little bit of reading, which I don't like to do on this show, but there's a story about here's the headline. Did doctor's shot make his cancer worse? It's an Atlantic article, and it's quite a chronicling of a doctor's experience, but we're not supposed to know about it. We're not supposed to talk about it. We're supposed to believe that this is an incredibly rare occurrence, and there's also a funny headline out of COVID world. We'll do that when we come back, and then when I come back again, I wanted to look at Kevin McCarthy. This is the guy that's going to lead the Republican Party should the Republicans take over the House in the midterm elections. It looks like they will. I can't believe it's not going to be a landslide, but they're telling us it's close. Republicans may not take back the Senate if the media is to be believed. I think they just do those things to make campaigns spend more campaign money. They run polls to show everything's neck and neck to make sure that all the political candidates have to spend a ton of money on media. If the media came out and said, oh, it's going to be a landslide, this race isn't even close, well, then why would either of the candidates spend any money? At least the winning candidate would just say, oh, okay, well, we can sit back. We don't need to spend any money. As long as they tell them it's close, they needed to do a ton of media buys. So I never trust the media on their polls heading into an election. But if the Republicans take over, and I hope they do, much dislike as I have for the Republicans, if the Republicans do take over, Kevin McCarthy will be the guy leading in the House. And he has got something now, I believe, that Republicans are about to be tricked again. They're giving you something called the Commitment to America Plan. This is very reminiscent. They're using the old playbook from the 1990s under Bill Clinton, where they had the Contract with America Plan. How's that worked out for us? How are we doing 30 years after the Contract with America? That was the Newt Gingrich thing. Well, they're trying to regurgitate this stuff. Now, there's some things in here that I would certainly agree with. Don't trust they'll get anything done meaningfully, but we're going to take a look at the Commitment to America Plan under the horrific Kevin McCarthy. This guy is not your friend. He's going to end up leading the Republican Party. It's why I'm so sad to say I'd like to see the Republicans take over Congress to stop the insanity of the left, to take the gavel away from Nancy Pelosi. That certainly needs to happen, but if you think that they're going to turn everything around and give, you know, restore power to the people, which is what Kevin McCarthy's saying, I got another thing to tell you. It ain't going to happen. I'll be right back. One of the things coming down from the top that is so dangerous to Republicans, Democrats, black, white, everybody is under attack by these things, and that's the SHOT program. Here's a fun little headline. Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla said on Saturday that he has tested positive for COVID again. The second time he has contracted the virus in under 2 months. This is the CEO of Pfizer. He's had COVID twice in 2 months. You would think that alone would be enough to end this insanity. Of course, it is not. But I wanted to get to this story. Let's see if I got time. Hopefully, I got time to get through most of this. If you are considering these boosters, don't. Now, I don't know if that gets me in any level of trouble. They're worthless, and if you made it through the first couple of shots and nothing happened to you, and so you just disregard all the people who are warning you about the safety of these shots, understand every single one of them accelerates your chance of having a side effect. I'm not going to have a side effect from a vaccine because I'm not taking the vaccine. That's 100%. I could get COVID, but I'm willing to risk the very minimal disease that it is instead of taking these shots, and I'll show you what I mean. This is an Atlantic story. On a doctor and cancer. Here's the headline. Did a famous doctor's COVID shot make his cancer worse? A lifelong promoter of vaccines suspects he might be the rare, unfortunate exception. In September 22 of last year, Michael Goldman, a Belgian immunologist and one of Europe's best-known champions of medical research, walked into a clinic near his house, rolled up his sleeve, and had a booster shot delivered into his arm. He knew he'd need it more than most. Just a few weeks earlier, now this was a booster, so we already had the first two, okay? Just a few weeks earlier, Michael, 67, had been to see his younger brother, Serge, the head of nuclear medicine at the hospital of the Université Libre de... whatever. Where both men are professors. Michael, and it may be pronounced Michelle, but Michael... was having night sweats, and he could feel swollen lymph nodes in his neck. So his brother brought him in for a full-body CT scan. When the images came through to Serge's computer, they revealed a smattering of inky spots bunched near Michael's left armpit and running up along his neck. It was cancer of the immune system, lymphoma. Now, I'm not saying that his first two shots caused this lymphoma, but there is some evidence out there right now that damaging your immune system leaves you vulnerable not only to infectious diseases, but also to cancers. But let's just say people have been getting cancer long before these shots came out there, so maybe that's just what happened. He just happened to get cancer. And given his own area of expertise, Michael understood that this meant he'd soon be immunocompromised by chemotherapy. With another winter on the way and perhaps another wave of COVID infections, that meant he had just a narrow window of opportunity in which his body would respond in full to COVID vaccination. Having received two doses of Pfizer the prior spring, before his cancer diagnosis, Michael quickly went to get his third. If he was about to spend months absorbing poison as he tried to treat a deadly cancer, at least he'd have the most protection possible from the pandemic. Boy, there's a million things wrong with this story I don't have to get into. But anyway, within a few days, though, Michael was somehow feeling even worse. His night sweats got much more intense, and he found himself quite out of character taking afternoon naps. Most worryingly, his lymph nodes were even more swollen than before. He conferred with Serge again, and they set up another body scan for September 30th, 6 days before Michael was scheduled to start his cancer treatment. Once again, he sat in the radiology waiting room while his brother waited for the pictures to appear on his computer. Serge's bushy eyebrows furrowed when he spoke with Michael after having seen the scans. The guy says, I will always remember his face. It was just incredible. The picture showed a brand new barrage of cancer lesions, so many spots that it looked like someone had set off fireworks inside Michael's body. More than that, the lesions were now prominent on both sides of his body, with new clusters blooming in Michael's right armpit in particular and along the right side of his neck. Now, why is that important? When Michael's... hematologist saw the scan, she told him to report directly to the nearest hospital pharmacy. He'd have to start on steroid pills right away, she told him. Such a swift progression for lymphoma in just 3 weeks was highly unusual, and he would not risk waiting a single day longer. As he followed these instructions, Michael felt a gnawing worry that his COVID booster shot had somehow made him sicker. His brother was harboring a similar concern. The asymmetrical cluster of cancerous nodes around Michael's left armpit on the initial scan had already seemed, quote, a bit disturbing. As his brother said, especially given that Michael's first two doses of vaccine had been delivered on that side. Now he'd had a booster shot in the other arm, and the cancer's asymmetry was flipped. The brothers knew this might be just an eerie coincidence, but they couldn't shake the feeling that Michael had experienced what could be a very rare, that's what they say, a very rare yet life-threatening side effect of COVID vaccination. Now understand what they're saying. He took the two shots in his left arm, got a bunch of cancer on his left side. After that was discovered, he went to go get the start treatment for the cancer that he got on his left side, the same side that he had the first two shots in. He got his third shot in his right arm, and the cancer switched over to his right side after the booster. The story goes on a little bit longer. I'll either finish it next hour, or maybe that's enough. Maybe that is enough. That's enough to stop the whole damn program right there. That one story. They won't, and many people will suffer for it. Be right back.
Do I look lonely? I see the shadows on my face. People have told me I don't look the same. Maybe I lost weight. I'm playing.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I try really to wrap up segments, particularly at the top of an hour, but I'm going to finish up with this. I think this story is so important because if you have got a friend, a loved one, anybody who has got cancer right now, and they are being prodded by the medical establishment to make sure you get your booster because this chemotherapy is going to make you immunocompromised and very susceptible to COVID. Now, I believe in 50 years from now, should we ever regain our sanity and the medical community actually be open to the idea that they were wrong about something, we will look back on chemotherapy as the same we did as bloodletting back in the 14th century. Chemotherapy is poisoning the entire system, the cancer, and your healthy cells just to kill the cancer. Chemotherapy just wrecks the human body, absolutely wrecks it across the board. I believe there will be a time where we say, oh my God, I can't believe that's what we did for 50 years. But if you've got a relative or somebody that you love or care about that is facing a cancer diagnosis, and they are telling them, go get this shot, because once you start chemo, you're really going to be susceptible to COVID. You need to share this story. It's, again, on The Atlantic. I'll just give you the headline of it. You can search for it on the internet yourself. Did a famous doctor's COVID shot make his cancer worse? This is from The Atlantic. You can find it online. And what the story is, if you're just joining us, this doctor, and this is interesting to me too, his name is, it's M-I-C-H-E-L, so it may be Michel. I've been saying Michael just because I think that's the kind of the translation of it, as a Michael myself. But it is Michael Goldman, a Belgian immunologist and one of Europe's best-known champions of medical research. Isn't it interesting that an immunologist, the name inferring that they are all about the immune system, right? Keeping you immune to diseases. It's interesting that an immunologist gets cancer in the first place, isn't it? I mean, of any of us that you would think would be able to duck a cancer diagnosis for their life, it would be somebody that's an immunologist and a champion of medical research, but no. So he got the Pfizer shots on his left arm and developed cancer on his left side. Facing chemotherapy, they told him, like the medical establishment will tell all cancer patients, you better get the booster to protect you while you go through chemo. So he got the booster on his right side, and the next scans he took showed that the cancer had actually moved to his right side where he had gotten the booster shot. That's where we are in this story. Now, he's consulting with another one of his brothers, but I wanted to finish out this story, and then I had one more little weird antidote. Anecdote from the soccer world. So let me finish out this story about this doctor whose cancer has shifted. It seems to be moving around to wherever the shots are. For a doctor who had spent four decades studying and advocating for new medicines, that feeling would unfold, the feeling that maybe, let me start this paragraph again so you get the whole picture. So he's gone to his brother's, done another scan of him. They find that his cancer has switched to the side that he got his booster shot in. It says the brothers knew this might be an eerie coincidence, but they couldn't shake the feeling that Michael had experienced what would be a very rare yet life-threatening side effect of COVID-19 vaccination. For a doctor who had spent four decades studying and advocating for new medicines, that feeling would unfold into many months of deliberation and self-doubt. Now, none of these people had any self-doubt. They had, as a matter of fact, they had suspended all doubt when they recommended billions of people accept this shot into their lives. Michael used to run an institute for vaccine technology research, and he's spoken out to reassure the public about the safety of the COVID vaccines and the mRNA vaccines in particular. In December of 2020, he told an interviewer that, quote, "If there was a real problem with the technology, we'd have seen it before now for sure." Unquote. If there was a real problem with the technology, we'd have seen it before now for sure. And strangely enough, he is now suffering from a life-threatening condition that they just didn't see before now. Well, he's seeing it now, up close and personal. His main concern, he continued, was that people would use the mere possibility of side effects, quote, as an argument not to be vaccinated, unquote. But now that possibility appeared to be splattered all over his medical charts. Michael Goldman, champion of the mRNA vaccines, suspected that he was their unlucky victim. Huh. Huh. And this little nugget from the soccer world. Hertha Berlin winger Jean-Paul Boetius is suffering from testicular cancer. Well, that's no story, Mike. Are you seriously making the leap that you're just assuming that his vaccination caused his testicular cancer? People have had testicular cancer long before these vaccines came out. Well, that's true. That's very true. You're right. But listen to the rest of the story. He is the fourth Bundesliga, I don't know how you say that's one of these soccer leagues. He's the fourth player to receive such a diagnosis this season. 28-year-old Boetius was informed Wednesday after a urological examination that will be and will be operated on Friday. The club said he, quote, will be out for the foreseeable future. His teammate Mario Richter and Union Berlin defender Timo Boggiardi recently returned from their testicular cancer. Dortmund striker Sebastian Haller, signed by Ajax in the summer, is still being treated for a malignant tumor after being diagnosed in the preseason. Now, I don't know. I don't know if there's a good way to internet search. How many European soccer players get testicular cancer every season? I don't know if those statistics are kept. That's a rather specific search. But it does seem in a short period of time for four young, healthy, highly trained, highly tuned athletes to all come down with testicular cancer at the same time, seems like something maybe worth a tad bit of investigation. But there will be none forthcoming. All right, when we come back, we're going to get into this commitment to America. This is the new Republican plan. And let me just go ahead and tell you right now, I'm praying for a red wave. I really hope it happens. I'm not being in the least bit sarcastic about that. If this nation does not turn its back on leftism, as crazy as it's been, and with the demented Joe Biden being the leadership of that side, if we do not turn our back on the Democratic Party at this point, I'm going to be very, very depressed. So I am hoping for a red wave, just as a rebuke to everything coming out of the Democratic Party right now. And in this Commitment to America plan, there is one thing I absolutely love, and they're promising it's one of the first things they will do, so I will wait with bated breath for this. It's something I would demand if the Republicans take over. But we're going to take a look at this Commitment to America because Kevin McCarthy is a snake. Kevin McCarthy is everything that's wrong with politics. And Republicans are going to genuflect to him now because, number one, well, he's kind of a Trump ally. He said nice things about Donald Trump. He did so for political power and so that you'd like him. But because he says nice things about Donald Trump, a lot of conservatives think he's one of the good guys. And he's poised to be House leader if the Republicans take over the chamber. And just the very beginning reading of this story, when somebody comes out to you and they lie to your face about something, you need to be suspect about their plans going forward. I'll explain what I'm talking about when we come back. Stick around.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain.
All right, we are back. I don't know how much this nuance lands with anybody listening to this show to understand that I am really, honestly, no sarcasm intended, cheering for a Republican victory across the board when it comes to the midterm elections. At the same time, I don't have any great hope that they're going to tackle any of their really big things. They never do. How's that Obamacare working out for you? How's that income tax? How's that IRS working for you? How's that war with Russia going for you? Now, the Democrats are in charge, but the Republicans are frothing at the mouth for this war with Russia. And so the Republican Party gets no pass from me whatsoever. The Democrats have lost their ever-loving mind. I want to see America rebuke the Democratic Party. It is certainly time. It seems like this is the easiest thing in the world. I got to tell you, if the Republicans lose this thing, I know everyone's going to say, well, it's election fraud. Well, maybe so, but you know, they control a lot of states. If they can't handle their elections in states, the Republicans won't do that. I don't know what anybody's clinging to with either one of these parties anymore at all. It's just completely lost. But we'll see. But the disingenuousness, I know the Contract with America was very, very successful. Newt Gingrich is a political genius. He's a blood-soaked monster. He's a neocon warmonger. He's a statist. He's a hero of conservatives for some reason, because he took on Bill Clinton and impeached him for lying about having sex. I don't know. Are we rethinking that now after seeing how the impeachment thing can just be used against Trump repeatedly? But I'm not a fan of Newt Gingrich, but the Contract with America, and at the time I was. Let me tell you, when the Contract with America came out, I was a Kool-Aid drinking neocon Republican warmonger, and everything Newt Gingrich said, I regurgitated at every cocktail party I went to. But in hindsight, I realize what Newt Gingrich is, and he is part of what has created the largest institution, being the U.S. government, in the history of all of mankind. There's never been an organization larger than the U.S. federal government, and it's gotten bigger every year under Republicans or Democrats. So, Republican candidates, please, if you're of the establishment, spare me your small, limited government fiscal responsibility speech. I'm not buying it anymore. I bought it for about 8 years. I'm embarrassed that it took me that long to catch on to you people. But I wanted to read this about the Contract with America. Excuse me, the Commitment to America plan. This is pure marketing, but it does have some good things in it. But I wanted to read this because when somebody talks and they immediately lie, this is where I understand that, this is just another scam. This is another marketing ploy. It has nothing to do with actually turning the direction of the big things. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, a Republican from California, on September 23rd unveiled Republicans' quote, Commitment to America plan, which includes a litany of policy promises on various issues. He said that the plan is about, quote, here's the first lie. He said that the plan is about, quote, the American public. Not about the politicians in Washington. Right. Quote, for last year and a half, we've gone across the nation listening to Americans, he continued, and they're fearful. They wonder whether they can afford it. Can they afford to fill up their gas? Can they go to the grocery store again, which now costs more? Adding to these worries, McCarthy noted, is rapidly rising inflation, which over the past year has broken record after record. Quote, now Americans' take-home pay is less, he said. Quote, they only get 11 months. They lost 1 month of their wages because the Democrats have caused inflation. And so what we think you should do is actually have a plan for a new direction. Does anybody spot the glaring lie in that statement? Because the Democrats have caused inflation. This is two-party pandering. They know you'll fall for it. The vast majority of people will. That's why people put up Bidenflation stickers all over the place in the grocery stores, at the gas tanks. Biden plays a part in bad energy policy. There's no doubt about that. But if you think the Democrats alone, it is your government. Everybody who has served in the government. Well, almost everybody. I'm going to give you one lone example in just a second. But this is just a little blast from the past. As Kevin McCarthy says here, as he talks about the Commitment to America plan, if he wants, why does he have to lie? That's my question. Inflation's not hard. Inflation is not a difficult thing to be honest about. The Federal Reserve has had to print up a bunch of money to facilitate the out-of-control spending of Washington, D.C., both parties. It's not hard. It's really not. That's basically it. So why does he have to lie? Why doesn't he say out-of-control D.C. spending? But he doesn't. He tells because he wants to mobilize his base. See, this is politics. This is not about you. It's about the politicians. He starts out by saying this is about the American public, not about the politicians in Washington, D.C. Yet in his own statement right here, what he does is try to cover for a bunch of Republican politicians who are complicit in this spending as well. Should we not forget? This is a story from 2020. President Trump on Friday signed into law a historic $2.2 trillion coronavirus relief package, the largest stimulus deal in U.S. history, as the pandemic devastates the nation's economy and sickens thousands. Of course, the pandemic didn't devastate anything. The hysterical reaction to the pandemic is what devastated the nation's economy. Quote, "This will deliver urgently needed relief to our nation's families, workers, and businesses, and that's what this is all about," Trump said in an Oval Office flanked by GOP lawmakers and administration officials. This is for a $2.2 trillion spending bill. This is Trump again, quote, "I want to thank Republicans and Democrats for coming together, setting aside their differences and putting America first." The bill included $500 billion in direct checks to American families, inflationary, $500 billion in small business loans, inflationary, $150 billion in hospital funding, inflationary, and a $150 billion relief fund for state and local governments, among other measures. All of that's inflationary. I'm inserting myself, explaining that these are all inflationary. Trump signed the CARES Act in the Oval Office just hours after the package was passed in the House with overwhelming bipartisan support. Let's get a couple of quotes from the people in the House of Representatives where this monstrosity started. Quote, "The American people deserve a government-wide, visionary, evidence-based response to address these threats to their lives and their livelihood, and they need it now." That was said by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the Democrat from California. The next quote from this story is, quote, "We are going to help Americans through this. We are going to do this together," said House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. There's your guy. Yet he tells you in the opening salvo of this Commitment to America that it's the Democrats that caused inflation. Absolutely nothing to do with what they did. I wanted to play. This was actually what took place on the House floor when debating this bill, but they weren't debating it. They were just passing it. Let me see if I can get this to work. Here we go.
All time for debate has expired. Pursuant to House Resolution 911, the previous question is ordered on the motion.
Hold on one second. I'm going to jack up the volume on this. I'm having to use a second computer. This is from the New York Post, and they have got such a horrific, and I'm all for these media companies making money. They provide me a lot of information for free, essentially, but they jack up so many pop-ups and everything else on their sites that it makes it almost impossible to play a video. So I've had to bring in a second computer here. So let me get this back here because I want people to understand this. Look, you can vote for Republicans in the midterm. I do not blame you one single bit. You get no argument from Mike Madison about trying to create a red wave this fall. But if you think your work is over then, the Republicans will get us back on track now. You are fooling yourself, absolutely fooling yourself. So again, here we go. I'm going to get this, got the sound up a little bit. This is when this $2.2 trillion, this used to be considered a lot of money. It's probably more than the GDP of, the bottom half of all countries on planet Earth. $2.2 trillion is a lot of money. And so they're passing this bill. But here is what took place that day when the Republicans and Democrats joined hand in a bipartisan way, as Trump says, thanks to the Republicans and Democrats for coming together and doing this, and for Kevin McCarthy to say, we're going to do this together. Here's what took place that day.
It has expired pursuant to House Resolution 911. The previous question is ordered on.
Isn't that interesting? I'm just saying, this horrific bill was 9/11 was the bill number. Just interesting. Like I say, I'm a coincidence theorist.
The motion. The question is on adoption of the motion. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The ayes have it.
Mr. Speaker.
Okay, what you're about to hear is Thomas Massie. Thomas Massie, the libertarian Republican from Kentucky, who is actually going to try to get them to do an actually recorded vote on this monstrous, largest ever in the history of mankind spending bill. He thought that it was constitutionally warranted that they actually record their vote and be forced to show up for their jobs and stake in their on their record that they went for this. You know why Thomas Massie probably wanted this? Because he knew it would be inflationary, and he wanted to make sure there was a record of everybody who voted for it, which was dang near everybody. So here's Thomas Massie, the one lone guy in Congress who wanted to stand up against this monstrous spending bill on just a unanimous consent vote without even being on the record of voting for this inflationary bill. Here's Thomas Massie objecting.
For what purposes, gentlemen, seek recognition?
Mr. Speaker, I came here to make sure our republic doesn't die by unanimous consent in an empty chamber, and I request a recorded vote.
A recorded vote is requested. Those favoring a recorded vote will rise and remain standing until counted. An insufficient number having risen, a recorded vote is refused.
Mr. Speaker.
Is the gentleman recognized?
I object on the basis that a quorum is not present and make a point of order that a quorum is not present.
The chair will count for a quorum. Counted for a quorum. A quorum is present. The motion is adopted. Without objection, a motion to reconsider is laid upon the table. Pursuant to Section 7B of House Resolution 891, the House stands adjourned until 3 p.m. on Tuesday, March 31st, 2020.
Boom, and they got it done. They got it through. Thomas Massie tried to stand up and say, and he made comments at the time. He said, look, if we're making postal workers go to work during this pandemic, this scary pandemic, if we're making truckers go to work during this scary pandemic, if we're asking EMTs to go out into the field during this scary pandemic, maybe we could ask Congress critters to come into Congress and do their damn job. That's what Thomas Massie was doing. He was rebuked. And what happened? What was the response to that? There were actually some blank yous launched at Thomas Massie, including a pretty harsh statement from one Donald Trump. The story went on to say after that, Trump fumed at Thomas Massie on Friday morning, calling him a, quote, third-rate grandstander and adding, quote, throw Massie out of the Republican Party. So the one guy who tried to stand up to this egregious, massive spending bill by Republicans and Democrats, which is the problems that we have now, contrary to the lie that Kevin McCarthy tries to tell you when he says, because the Democrats have caused this inflation, when Thomas Massie tried to stand up against this machine that's created the inflation that you're suffering from right now, Donald Trump wanted him thrown out of the Republican Party because Donald Trump has no actual principles whatsoever. He just wants people to like him, and he wanted to be able to shut down your business and deliver $2.2 trillion of fake printed-up money, which has created the inflation that we have right now. So, Kevin McCarthy, this is another marketing trick. Now, there is one good thing in here I will say about this commitment to America. They have said, and if I'm on air when this thing, if they take over the House, If I'm on air in January and the Republicans take control after January, I'll be watching this one like a hawk. They have said that one of their first things that they intend to do is to take down the new IRS spending and not fund the hiring of 87,000 new IRS agents. Now, here's the thing. If they don't win the Senate, they don't have a chance of doing that anyway. It was passed through a reconciliation process, which I don't understand this stuff, but I read this, which makes it they're unable to undo it in the House without being able to undo it in the Senate, for whatever that's worth. So Republicans are telling you this may be another one of these promises, kind of like Obamacare, where they tell you they're going to do something, they're going to campaign on it, everybody's going to throw their vote in it when they know there's basically no chance that they'll be able to do it or not. But should Republicans have a red wave, which I am hoping for, the very first thing they should do is pull that evil, evil, evil IRS institution off the backs of average everyday Americans. They should abolish the whole thing, but I know the game the Republicans play. They want to keep picking your pockets to control you almost as bad as the Democrats do. I'll be right back.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. You know, hypocrisy is just, it's so evident on both sides. I spent a big chunk of a show last week after Joe Biden, the demented one, had given his speech in front of the UN, just completely full of hypocrisy. It was about a 30-minute speech. I only got through 4 minutes of it, and it took me about 30 minutes of airtime just to get through 4 minutes because the hypocrisy I wanted to point out every time he uttered, and it was basically every line that Joe Biden delivered was hypocritical. So I wanted to talk about it. But the hypocrisy on the Republican side when it comes to spending, and the reason that's so important is because, you know, I know a lot of right-wingers are, you know, they talk about China and Iran and the Democrats. I'm telling you, the biggest threat to your way of life, I mean, your day-to-day activities, the future of your children is not China or Iran. It is the spending, because you will soon find out there's a consequence to that, as you're already feeling now through inflation. But the spending is very important, and Republicans pretending that they don't spend like the Democrats, I'm going to show you again in just a second what I'm talking about. And it's fine. I want this red wave, too. But you need to hold Republicans' feet to the fire on spending. They don't only need to stop spending too much. They need to start cutting. They've never done that. Republicans play that same game of they will come out and they'll tell you that they're reducing government spending because they originally thought they were going to increase some agency by 9% this year, but they only increased it by 6%. They call that a government cut to trick you. I got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
I am, Mike. Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
Well, you know, it wasn't but just a couple of years ago that Rand Paul tried to introduce a budget resolution or whatever you want to call it to get them to reduce spending by just 2% across the board.
Then he, 2%. Yeah, and then he took it down to 1%, and he couldn't get 1%.
He couldn't get 1%. Thinking Republican to tail along with him.
Nope.
In the Senate. None.
1%. Now, Americans right now, because of the inflation from government spending, Americans have had their dollar or their purchasing power reduced just over the past year by around 15 or 16%. I think that's probably conservative. So we have just cut what we can have by about 15%, but Congress, you're exactly right. I'm glad you brought that up. Rand Paul couldn't convince them to reduce spending by 1% per year, and he wanted it year after year after year. So it would take 10 years to even get to 10% spending reductions, and they wouldn't go along with it.
Yeah, and this agreement that they've come up with now, the Republicans, sounds a whole lot like what Gingrich and his clan came up with back in 96.
Oh, this is just a regurgitated political ploy. It is nothing but marketing.
Know, it worked then, and a lot of the people that were voting back then are dead or gone or whatever. And then the younger ones that are coming up now that are now older, they don't remember the contract with America that the Republicans came up with back then. So you know, they just roll this back out because we have no new original ideas. And if we just say this,
right,
then we won't have to worry about it.
Yeah, there is nothing in here that I've seen that Kevin McCarthy has said about cutting spending. It's just to stop Democrats' runaway spending. Let me read a little bit of this to you. The key pillars of this plan rearticulate often repeated GOP criticisms of the current regime. One such position is a promise to stop Democrats, quote, runaway spending, unquote. Since they thinly took the majority of both chambers, Democrats have spent a staggering amount of money, and the cost of consumer essentials has risen by over 8% on average. Now, listen to this as the part that I think is important. In March of 2021, the party, they're talking about the Democrats, the party used the partisan reconciliation process to pass a $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill dubbed the American Rescue Plan with no GOP support or input. Later, the majority party was joined by a handful of Republicans in each chamber to pass a $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. Now, what this is you notice these dates. I just read to you the $2.2 trillion spending bill when Donald Trump was in office. They signed it, and when Thomas Massie dared to force them to actually vote on it, Trump wanted him run out of the party. But they certainly rubber-stamped $2.2 trillion. In March of 2021, suddenly they're opposed to a $1.9 trillion bill. It has nothing to do with their allegiance or their opposition to spending. It has the only thing it has to do with is political theater. In March of 2021, spending $1.9 trillion was easy to oppose because Biden's regime was the one proposing it. But when the Trump regime proposed $2.2 trillion spending, and Trump wanted more than that, if you remember, when the checks were going out for $1,200 apiece, Trump said, why can't we do $2,000? He wanted more money put in that. But they rubber-stamped $2.2 trillion in spending under Trump, and then they pretend to oppose spending when a Democrat's in charge. That is the game.
Well, the Republicans in Congress, truthfully, have never met a spending bill that they sponsored that they didn't love. The only time they oppose one is when it's brought up by the Democrats.
Right.
And the vice versa. The Democrats only oppose spending when it's brought up by the Republicans, unless there's those times where the Republicans go along and say, hey, you know, I know you wanted a four trillion dollar budget. Let's go 4.5. And then the Democrats are like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, we've done that before. But these Republicans, I know it's hard for people to believe, but they are. They're the most corrupt, hypocritical group of folks you've ever met in your life.
Well, yeah.
And they're just disgusting.
What I say, I do hope there's a red wave. I want to see the nation rebuke the left right now, and the Democratic Party in particular, which is absolutely horrific right now. But for people who think they can usher in this red wave, they can take over the House and the Senate and then sit right back on their fat American duffs and just think that the Republicans are going to control it. Oh, we can just breathe a sigh of relief. It's all going to get better now. I don't know if you've noticed where we were in 2020. After 4 years of a Republican president, two of those years, he also had complete control of Congress. Things are not getting better. It doesn't matter who is in charge. So do not believe these promises. It's no different than this, we're going to repeal Obamacare. And then, of course, it became, we're going to repeal and replace, which means this is a Republican doublespeak for saying, we're going to get rid of that bad Obamacare, but we're going to keep the government in health care. We're just going to do it through our way. You know, we're just going to name it after ourselves.
And they've done this IRS thing too. Wasn't that the Republican idea? We need to get the American people to be able to do their income tax on a postcard.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to make it much.
How does that work for us? Yeah.
Right. We need to make it so much easier for the American people to be robbed. And you know, that's the funny thing is that Republicans use that talking point so that maybe people don't notice they're being robbed of, anywhere from a quarter to a half of their income by the federal government. Now they just want to make it easier. So Republicans will literally, it's like a burglar coming in and saying, look, it takes a lot of time for me to slap you around for an hour and a half. I just want to come in the door, punch you in the face, and take your wallet. Let's not do this whole hour and a half me really beating you senseless. And Republicans go, oh, okay, you're just going to punch me in the face once and steal my money. Thank goodness for you. You're my guy.
Well, you know, the Republicans went along with some IRS reforms, some tax reforms, they helped eliminate the deductions that,
right.
that most people got to use, like mortgage interest and
right.
and state taxes. They took all that away. But now all of a sudden, well, we need to get the rich paying their fair share. Hell, every time they get a chance to make the rich pay their fair share, they dump it on the people that need the deductions the most.
Yeah, the Trump tax cuts, they still herald this as some great achievement. I don't know anybody whose life was dramatically changed. In my opinion, of course, I'm a weirdo libertarian that nobody wants to pay any attention to or think that my ideas are crazy. They don't deserve a nickel of your money. The idea that they're going to take 3% less impresses me none.
Well, if they eliminated all income taxes from all citizens, it would affect the budget less than, 5% total?
No, I think,
the federal spending by maybe 5%.
No, they take a lot of money out of people's pockets. I believe it's a couple of trillion dollars.
A lot more from other sources.
It's about even, I believe. It's about $2 trillion they extract from the pockets of everyday Americans. But the problem is that they're printing just as much as that, too. So why do they need to take it out of our pockets and then still print? If they would control their spending, then they could, number one, not take it out of our pockets and just print it. Just leave us out of it. If you're going to lead us down this path, quit taking our money so we can't even prepare for the catastrophe you're leading us to.
Well, and when they do reduce the taxes, then they, like you say, spend more.
Right.
So they create more inflation, which is still just another tax.
Exactly.
On those who can least afford it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Inflation really is.
But they've got to rely on Kevin McCarthy going out there and telling you that the Democrats are the one responsible for inflation. The Trump tax cuts, everybody's paying that back, and then some right now through inflation. When Donald Trump was in office, he signed huge spending bills, not including what went out in 2020, but every single year he signed off on about $1 trillion deficits. And this was he begged the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates back down to zero. And he wanted negative interest rates. He wanted the money printing to keep going. So everybody who heralds the Trump tax cuts, I don't know what you saved, but you're paying it back right now because Trump was a part of this inflation. So was Obama and so is Biden. It's not all Trump's fault. But the idea of the Trump tax cuts, your money is being sucked up in this inflation tax right now as repayment of that.
Well, and, I want to see a red wave, too, because the Democrats are just crazy.
Yes.
They're just nuts.
Absolutely.
But that's the problem is we will not hold the Republicans accountable for their campaign promises or for what they do. We'll just sit around and say, well, at least we got the Republicans in charge. You know that old, the adults are back in charge.
Yeah.
We'll have that.
And I've got sympathy for people on the right who think that. I look at the cabinet, the people that have surrounded Joe Biden, they are the least impressive people I've ever seen. I mean, at least when you've got a Donald Rumsfeld or a Dick Cheney, who are just absolutely horrific, corrupt war profiteers and war criminals, but at least they kind of had game. They were very the people now, they look like toddlers up there. They're from the press secretary down to Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg. I mean, the whole operation does look like it's run by a special ed class. But when the Republicans are just going to put slicker thieves in there, that's the only thing they're going to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the call, Robert. Got to jump to a break. Thanks, man. All right, quick break. We'll be right back. All right, only a couple of minutes left, but I'm just telling you, don't believe the Republicans' three-card Monty on spending. And I'm going to show you an example right now. I finally got some math on this. So the Republicans are going to come out right now, and rightfully, they're going to make a bunch of bones about Biden and his ridiculous student loan forgiveness. I didn't take on that debt. Why should I be paying for someone else's college education? I hear you, brother. I hear you, sister. You're exactly right. They've estimated that this is going to cost the American taxpayer somewhere between $300 and $500 billion. And boy, the Republicans are supercharged about that, aren't they? It's ridiculous. It's wrong. They want to take away Democrats' out-of-control spending. I've talked about this a lot, but I finally got some math on this. Republicans passed Medicare Part D. So all of you people who don't want to pay for college education for kids, which I totally get, you're exactly right, you've been paying for senior citizens' drugs now for 15 years. because the Republicans, many of whom, sponsors of the bill, parachuted out into big pharma company jobs for millions of dollars a year. The start of that plan in 2007, it cost taxpayers $46 billion. By 2016, that had reached $79 billion a year. This is a year. It's been going on for 15 years now, paying for seniors' prescription drugs. So let's do a quick tally there. Let's just say right now, in 2016, it was $79 billion. You can rest assured that figure is substantially higher now. So I'll use a conservative figure. If that figure for the past 15 years has been $60 billion a year, that means the Republicans passed a $1 trillion entitlement program for senior citizens in Medicare Part D. $1 trillion. Did they tell you about that? When they're talking about the Biden student loan forgiveness, which they're estimating at $300 to $500 billion, did they mention the fact that they passed the largest entitlement since Lyndon B. Johnson back in 2007 when they controlled everything? And it has now cost you, and I would imagine if that's conservative at $60 billion a year, if it's even a smidge higher than that, it's $1 trillion. That people who do not take prescription drugs, people who are not senior citizens, are young people, working age people, are paying every year, and for the past 15 years have paid over $1 trillion. That's just one of their programs, just one. Do not buy this three-card Monty for the Republicans. You need to hold them to account to it. Start cutting things and maybe not roll out the largest entitlements in modern times. Be right back.
How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.